Welcome to the Round 12 Supercoach Coach Podcast. My name's Marcus and I'm joined this week by FB Donkey.
G'day mate, how you going? Did you miss me?
Did, but unfortunately haven't beat you this week and you're back on the show and I'd like to catch you one week, you know, when I've actually beat you. That'd be nice.
Yeah, I heard you had a decent one last week, mate, 2600 or something.
Yeah, and you weren't around for me to push it into your face. And then this week, I went and played Tim Smith over Bailey Fritch, which cost me about
85
points. Yep, and that was more than the difference between you and me. So
wow.
Just keep shooting myself in the foot, mate. You're some sort of bad luck charm.
That's a bit unfortunate, mate. Not sure how you made that decision in hindsight, but that's okay.
Yeah, in hindsight, awful. I went for a forward instead of a winger, who tends to be around the pill a little bit more. Oh, well, I still moved up in the rankings this week, which was surprising because my score was only 21-46. So that's good enough at this stage. You must have moved up a little bit because you scored in the 2200s. Why don't you catch us up on how you went on the weekend, mate?
So the last 2 weeks have been pretty good for me, really. I've gone from 3,500 to 1,495. So top 1,500 now, which gives me a chance to hopefully break into the top 1,000 over the buys. Although just looking at buy structures, it's so complicated and trying to get that right, it's going to be a bit tricky. So yeah, reasonably happy with where things sit at the moment. Some chance of going up the rankings ladder in the near future. Although, and Dunny's going to hate me for this because I did maybe help his decision making on this one. I did bring in Rocky last week and he was 24 at quarter time and finished on 41.
He was tagging, was he, Mark?
He was, but he was sucking well before he started tagging. So I think he had like 3 points in the second quarter and then was going backwards in the third and then they put him onto Mitchell and I think he just had a really dirty day and I still have high hopes that he can turn that one around, but just dirty when you bring someone in and they have their... And they do something like that, especially Rocky after all the pain he caused me last year.
I know you were sort of preempting that you were tempted by Rocky a few weeks out, but after the pain we both went through together last year, Mark, I was slightly surprised that on Twitter that you had posted sort of Team Rocky and that you were going ahead with it. Hopefully it turns around for you. The good thing is he's at least buy free over the next 3 weeks, Mark.
That's why I figured that he was pretty low risk just because he's buy free.
Worst case, you essentially waste the trade on a bloke that is mid-price and doesn't quite go up in price for you, but he shouldn't at least hurt you and he'll alleviate some pain around the buy.
If it doesn't work out, I'll just say I was trying to let you catch up.
Well, I'm glad the listeners didn't have to contend with your side of the equation last week. I think all three of us were leaning away from Rocky, although we did note that there were certain team structures that could consider his trade in a good move. So hopefully a few of our community members held off because a 41 was probably one of the poorer case scenarios for you. All right, for my team, I traded Murray and Barry to Smith and Walters. So finally got rid of Dom Barry. I thought bringing in a cheap upgrade target in Walters was a good opportunity to get rid of a essentially underperforming, underpriced rookie. So I'm glad to get him off my field or off my team ahead of the buys. And Walters scored 92. I think he was the second highest scorer in a pretty dour loss for Frio.
But did pick up a bit of a corky to his calf.
Which doesn't help because he's had a string of corkies and knee injuries already this preseason. I know injury history must have played a factor in you sort of staying away from Walters, Mark.
Probably the main factor, yeah, mate.
Yeah, so anyone who's on the Walters train, we've got some decent scoring to look forward to, but got to keep the fingers crossed on that injury history.
And we've already got some carnage for this week, mate. Fifey suspended, Coniglio maybe out.
If Coniglio and Fife are both out, for anyone who has Mitchell, Cripps and McRae, that could potentially be a very, very chaotic first round of the buys. But of all three rounds to have headaches in, round one tends to be the better one, especially because there's only four teams on the buy this week. So it's actually harder to get an even split. It should mean that, you know, your next two buy rounds are a bit less painful, right?
Hmm.
Let's go to a quick group update and a league update before we get cracking on the show. In terms of a group update, the top score for the week was Daniel's Cucking Funts with 23-24. That pushed him up into the top 1,000 at 853rd, which is great. And in terms of our overall leader, that's still Mark's team, Tankosaurus.
My team.
Not your team, Mark, but he slipped from third to sixth, which is still pretty good. Do want to give a shout out to Luke's team, though, one of our old school vets on the forum. Luke's team, McLovin, scored 22.47, and that was enough to see him break into the top 20, currently sitting at 14. So massive shout out to at In White Rooms on the forum, crushing it.
Yeah, he's one of my best Supercoach friends, so I am happy to claim all credit for how his team's going. Even though we've made a few different decisions this week, and I did advise him to keep Billings for a while there, so yeah, I'm not sure how he feels about that. He hasn't had a go at me about it yet, but yeah, kind of annoying. He's one of those teams where, like, every week you look at how he's going and he's just always scoring better than you. I don't know how he's doing it, but yeah, good on you, Luke. He's a great at this game.
All right, to a league update. We have moved up slightly again in the leagues, which is great. So we have all of the top four leagues right now, which is a fantastic accomplishment pre-buys. I don't know if we were necessarily heavily trending in that direction at the start of the season. It was a little bit hairy there.
We have been challenged a lot this year. But cream is rising at the moment.
9 of the top 20 overall and 25 of the top 100 leagues. So thank you so much to our community for being a part of that and helping us to represent the Supercoach Coach brand and the Supercoach Coach podcast. So massive shout out. It's very, very encouraging for all involved to see. Everyone's smiling heading into the buys rather than frowning because the buys tend to bring with it a few frowns, Mark.
It's going to be tricky. Can I take most of the credit for the league rankings as well?
I don't think you need permission for that, Mark. You'll take it anyway.
Okay. Yep, good to hear. Well done, me.
Yeah, good work. Good work, team. Now, a quick signpost for what's to come in this show. We're going to have a quick chat about buy strategy for week one. We'll look at the rookies, what to do with underperformers, who to bring in this week. Is it worthwhile bringing in a player who has only played the one game so far, like Miocek, who was on the radars during preseason and scored 97 for Collingwood on debut. And then we'll be looking to some trade-in targets. A majority of the focus there will be with the Port Adelaide players who are buy-free. So Robbie Gray, Boak, Justin Westhoff. And without further ado, Mark, let's start with the first question for this week's show about buy strategy. This one's from Tom McLean on Facebook. He's asking about what tactics to go with for this round given the first buy. Thoughts on that? And also, I'll chuck in a second question that you can tackle together. This one's from Nathan on Twitter. Do we build a war chest this week leading into next week's trades?
So just a small question to start?
Yeah, just a small one. Just answer everything.
Okay. Everything you need to know about the buyers. Basically, I think that my strategy with facing three buyers would be, if I was looking to bring a premium in and they were the right price, every premium is going to miss one of the next 3 weeks unless they're Suns or Ports players. So I'd probably be okay just bringing someone in. It's not affecting what rookies that I bring in. I mean, it is in the sense that I need to make sure I've got some balance over the next 3 weeks, and you would do the same with your premium. But if you've got money to spend, just spend it. Because you're either missing this week when you're not making the trade, or they're missing in round 13 or round 14. So there's not really a strong incentive to wait unless you're targeting the Port and Suns players, who maybe there's not a whole lot of premiums coming from those teams that are worthy of bringing into your team. So personally, I will be actually going, or most likely at this stage, going a bit of the war chest mode. So, but that's just because I like the rookies that are available, or just getting rid of some dead weight out of my team. I probably won't be bringing a premium in this week, but if there was the premium of the right price, I would be.
I think the only premiums I'd really be looking to bring in this week are Port or Gold Coast premiums. And then next week, that's when you start cashing in on players who are fresh off the bye.
So don't you think that what I said made sense though? Like if you're not chasing a Port or Suns player,
Yeah.
Like, and you're doing an upgrade, then you, it doesn't matter whether you bring someone in this week, because someone that you bring in is going to be, like, no matter who you bring in, they're going to be missing one of the next 3 weeks. So you either miss out on bringing them in this week because you're probably not going to use all your three trades, or you, or they miss out on the round 13 or round 14. I don't think it makes any difference.
I do agree with that. I think probably the only caveat to that is there's no point bringing in a player who is on the bye this week, right? If you're going to do that, you might as well wait the one extra week. But bringing in a round 13 or round 14 bye player, yeah, absolutely agree with you there. I think specifically for my team, though, the way I've planned it is this round to bring in one premium, and that'd be a port premium. Next round to bring in a player fresh off the bye, who'd probably be Elliot Yeo, and then Michael Hurley the week after. And those are the three trades to finish off my team, one trade each for the next three rounds. So in my particular situation, there's no need to necessarily go early. But overall, I agree with you, Mark, especially if you're looking at a round 14 bye player. We get three trades this week and three trades next week. So if you're in a situation like myself, where you only have three upgrades left to make, you could, you know, conceivably complete all your upgrading and have a finished team before you get to the last buy round.
Yeah.
So in that scenario, there's no point waiting for that last buy round and delaying the upgrade. You might as well pull the trigger now rather than waiting till next week. But I'm just not in a scenario where I really need to do that. I do agree with your advice overall, though. The War Chest one is interesting, though, because in terms of downgrade targets, there is a little bit more inherent risk in bringing in a player not even on the bubble yet. You know, building up a War Chest can be a little bit interesting. We're also four teams shorter in terms of downgrade options. Just something to keep in mind, right? Like, there's no reason to stop aggressively completing your team, bar the fact that over the next 3 weeks, player availability is actually pretty important. So between aggressively completing your team but bringing in targets that may get dropped over the bye periods versus having a more considered approach and making sure the players that you bring in will actually play, I'd go for sort of the latter move there.
It's a really interesting point that you bring up, and I think it's a trap that I've maybe fallen into a little bit over the last few years, which is focusing really, really hard on going for a downgrade target who's playing during the buys just so that I could get their points on field. But often they might end up only scoring 40, or they might not even be part of the best 18 over the buys, and then they're not actually part of the team on the run home either. So you bring in these players with really, really low job security because they have immediate job security because they're selected this week. And it's a bit of a trap you can fall into. And I probably will be a little bit more careful around that this year, hopefully.
Having said that, Mark, in terms of potentially holding off on trades this week, if you're in the scenario where you have, so in my situation, I have only 14 trades left. Let's say I wanted to keep 8 trades to come out of the buys, which I don't really think is necessary. But in that situation, I'd only want to make 6 trades over the next 3 weeks. Now, I can make 3 trades this week and 3 trades next week, and that's fine. But the trades I do this week aren't to players that are fresh off the bye. If I only want to make 6 trades across the next 3 weeks, it might actually make more sense to not do any trades this week, to do 3 trades next week and the week after. Yes, I do slow down in terms of my upgrade cadence, but because I'm not looking to max out on trades over the next 9 rounds, I'm making sure the trades that I do make are to purely buy free players rather than aggressively completing the team, but completing the team with players that are still going to miss in the next 2. So that's also something to keep in mind.
At this point, I think we should acknowledge that we are massive nerds, and that was one of the nerdiest things I've ever heard someone say.
Did we just lose like 3/4 of our audience?
I think that the risk of the approach that you just talked about is that you are forcing 6 trades into 2 weeks, where you're really cornering yourself into taking whatever rookies are available at that time. Like, you just have to take those rookies. So spreading those 6 trades out over the extra week, including this week, allows you to take maybe some rookies that are maybe potentially more promising.
Yeah. Let's get to some actual players to discuss now. You know, it's well and good to talk strategy and sort of these high level concepts, but the truth is everybody will be making slightly different decisions based on the makeup of your team, based on the buy makeup, based on how many trades you have left to complete, based on how many non-playing players you have facing into the buys. There is so much to take in. So just take what we've said with sort of a grain of salt. You want to incorporate the different ideas, the different call-outs that we made, but ultimately the call is going to be independent to your team, and ultimately it should be fairly player-driven, as it is a trap in the preseason to sort of force a structure and pick bad players. You're similarly risky during the buys, trying to have the ultimate buy period by reducing the number of donuts you have on field or whatever. But in that process, bring in players that end up causing you to suffer over the following 8 rounds to round out the season. So that'd probably be the main.
Can we use phrases like suboptimal?
I think that's perfect for this conversation, Mark. All right, let's get on to players now. We'll start off with the rookies. And this first question is from CJ Foster from Facebook, asking about what to do with underperforming players. So Spargo and Murphy are two players that he's talked about. And you could throw a fair few other players in there, including, you know, Dom Barry. So, Mark, heading into the buys, you do want to, as best you can, try to clear these guys out of your team. The complexity comes around the fact that a majority of them are underpriced. So you're committing to moving out underperforming and underpriced rookies, which potentially hurts your upgrade cycle as well. So it's a fine balance between getting them out and making sure that you have the best playing bench that you can heading into the buys versus also sacrificing too much value.
Tricky. I think that I'm probably leaning towards clearing these guys out this week. I've only got 13 trades left, so I've got to be a little bit careful about maybe how many I do that with and the reasons why I'm doing that. But like even Murphy to Austin potentially this week is a really strong possibility for me. It only gives me 50,000, but gets me hopefully cover for the rest of the year and some better scores on field during the buys, hopefully. And I know that there's some risk attached to that, but yeah, I think that doing that as soon as possible is probably my advice, that if you're going to correct them, I'd do it this round, which is my plan. And I guess you've just got to be careful about how many you do, because it's like there's only going to be so many downgrade targets, and there's only going to be so many trades you can make, and you're sort of pretty limited with how many you've got left at this stage. So this is the way to do it, but it's hard to do more than two.
I actually have a slightly different tack to that. I agree. This week is definitely the week to do it. And having three trades this week with a lot of people looking to sort of bank cash for next week, it is pretty much the perfect time to be getting out these players. Having said that, though, if a rookie is still getting games, but they've not matured enough to the point where I'm actually happy to trade them out, then I'd probably just hold them. So if you see Spargo and Murphy playing across the next couple of weeks, yes, they're not scoring brilliantly now, but all it takes is one big game for them to spike a 60, 70, 80 to have it pay off.
Yeah.
Yes, holding on to them for the entirety of the season hasn't been very enjoyable so far. But if anything, the bye periods gives them sort of an opportunity for redemption, where really they only need one or two games during this period to be beneficial for your team, especially in the weeks where you have more than 18 playing players. Well, Spargo and Murphy's scores might not count every week anyway. So the guys that are more concentrated on getting out are the guys who are not even getting games. So Dom Barry's prime example of that. If you think Lachlan Murphy's going to get dropped this week and will struggle to come back, then absolutely cut him. But if they're playing like Spargo is, I'm a lot more tempted to just hold.
Yep, I agree with all of that. Tim Smith's going to be an interesting one. Hopefully he's not actually injured and he does play this week, because that could be really painful if he doesn't.
Now, next question here is from Benoit, No Knees De Long Ray from Facebook. And he's asking whether or not Logan Austin is a no-brainer. He's averaging 99 from two games so far, Mark. Priced at 160K. So that is probably the concerning bit, and why you're saying you're not going to get much cash from your downgrade if you downgrade to Logan. But in terms of job security, it's pretty great. Like, their backline has been decimated by injuries, St. Kilda. What are your thoughts, Mark?
Well, on form, you'd think he'd keep his spot. The weird thing is that at Port Adelaide, he just, like, I don't know whether he even ever had a game over 50, and he played about 20 games. His scoring was just really, really awful at Port Adelaide. So to have these two big games feels a bit like Tim Smith. It feels a bit like we've already seen his best two scoring games. With that said, it's really, really hard to ignore someone when they have two really good games to start off. They're mature age and their role looks pretty safe within the team. So from that perspective, I'm a really good chance of bringing him in this week, even at the inflated price. I sort of think that his scoring is going to drop off, but it's just so hard not to bring someone like that in, because if he could keep up a 70 or 80 scoring, that would be massive. And I'd be very, very happy with that. So hopefully he's covered for the rest of the year. And yeah, look, a 90% chance of making my team this week.
For people looking to trade him in, you just got to look at your round 14 buy situation.
Yeah.
Especially those that bought in Bailey Rice pretty recently. But in my example, I've got Laird, Dodet, Murphy, and Dodet and Murphy will probably be gone by then. So Logan Austin looks even better. The other players on the bubble are Riley Stoddart, 117K backline play. He's only averaging 28 for Sydney, pretty poor. Ugh. You've got Callum Moore, 133K forward for Richmond. He's actually looked pretty decent and has played a role. You've got Jermaine Jones for Geelong, average 53 on the bubble as well. But we've got a lot of blokes still to come back, like Cockatoo, who will threaten that spot. So not great job security there. The one that probably tempts me the most outside of Austin is actually Jacob Heron, 102.4. So basement rookie price. He's only averaging 44, but he plays for Gold Coast. So he will represent every single of the next three rounds if he stays picked.
Yeah, if he stays picked.
That is the big caveat. So with that in mind, job security. Do you know much about this guy? He cost 57K less than Austin, which is something to keep in mind.
You're trying to sell him, mate. Couldn't pick him, to be honest. Small forward, plays for Gold Coast. Their side seems like it's way up in the air about what's going to be going forward because they have been terrible over the last month. Pretty young, skinny kid playing. Yeah. He may work out. He just seems like the sort of guy that's going to be deadwood pretty quickly there.
He was quite a smoky pick when they picked him up. I think he didn't even attend the combine. Definitely would be a player that you're bringing in for the buys more than anything else, which we flagged at the start of the show can be a little bit of a trap this time of year. So Austin seems like the main downgrade target this week. And that brings us to Jeff Lane's question, one of our patrons. Is Logan Austin the only viable downgrade this week? And in terms of players on the bubble, that certainly may be the case. But in terms of players who've just debuted and potential early downgrade targets, there are certainly a few tempting targets on the horizon. And
so I think that we've skipped over Callum Moore a little bit too much there. I think that Callum Moore's like a really good chance to get into my team this week. And I liked his game on the weekend, although he was matched up against Jordan Ridley and just gave him a lesson. Majacek, I think everyone that saw him in the preseason games, he was really super impressive then. And it's a bit of a surprise it's been taking him this long to get into the team, 25-year-old. He's the sort of guy that I definitely want to see one more game out of, though, like huge result in the first game. But can he back it up? I mean, the kicking a few goals should keep him inside for a few weeks. So, yeah, it seems pretty risky. Ahern is probably the one for me if you're going to go early on one. I know that he's... buy doesn't work exactly great with the forward line, but just the fact that he's been building up for so long, and if North weren't winning every week, he would have been in a few weeks ago, and they've held him back and 25 touches against a Lions outfit that were terrible on the weekend. Like, North completely dominated the points, but I was probably more confident in Ahern as a player that will come in definitely over the next 3 weeks.
And good to note, he's a mid forward as well. So that flexibility will help in the back end of the season. An 84 on debut for a former pick 7 is certainly very enticing. It's interesting what you said about Callum Moore, though. It sounds like, you know, if Austin doesn't work buy wise or you're looking for a couple of downgrade targets, yeah, you might be trading Moore in as a legitimate downgrade target. It's not a concern at all that he's a rookie and he's a key forward playing for the Premiers.
Yeah, that is a concern. Higgins has pretty much kept his spot. Like, I think if you're performing at the Tigers, you will get to keep your spot. And I do think that Hardwick has come to at least the realization a little bit that even though they won the premiership last year and it worked last year, you just do the same thing 2 years in a row. And I think that they do need a second marking target up forward. I mean, Caddy's been in absolutely brilliant form and performing that role to some extent, but I do think that they actually need a second tall and more. Has looked pretty good. He took a contested mark on the weekend. He was good on the lead, hitting up as a hit-up target around the 50-meter line. So, I think that he's someone that should get a game over the next few weeks at least, whether that's a long-term Richmond plan or not is always hard to judge, and it's so hard to predict the long-term futures of rookies at this point of the year.
Probably the other player that tickles my fancy who was on debut on the weekend was Will Brody, 187,700. Again, another player that we're looking at in the preseason. Yeah, he's highly talented, played some games last year, and that's why he's at the price point that he is. As a downgrade target, you'd not like to pay that amount of money, but whereas Logan Austin is still going to miss the game, Will Brody is fresh off the bye. So that in itself is pretty tempting.
Yeah, I'm a bit surprised about why Brody's just been held back this long. I'd like to see more. And that price, like seriously, that is an insanely difficult price to be paying for someone. Yeah, it's 187. Like you'd want to be playing every game for the rest of the year and performing really well. That's a really, really tricky price to pay, even though he's going to be buy free.
So when you look at his selection, I think you have to think in terms of the fact that he's 70K more than another rookie. And so you're essentially paying that 70K for the difference that he would deliver on field between him and the next best rookie, essentially, across the three buys. And that may, but very likely will not be enough to warrant his early selection.
Yep.
All right, Mark. So just to wrap up the rookies, maybe if you give a top four in terms of downgrade target this week.
Top four. That's a lot. I don't know whether there's four that I'd be happy with. I'm going to go Austin, Moore, Ahern, and put a line under it.
Oh, wow. You wouldn't go early on anyone else?
You would?
I'd be tempted by basement price Miocek.
Yep. I can totally understand why you would add that to the list.
All right. Anything else you want to add on the rookies before we move past this mark?
No, I think that's a pretty good discussion there, mate. I'm probably looking to bring in two this week, I think. No clear plans. It sort of depends a little bit on Fife, Canelio, how teams are named. Like, it's going to be a pretty interesting round. And one thing that I remember happening over the buys a lot is that we, after team sheets are named, there's a fair bit of panic that happens. So I just need to remain flexible.
I'm pretty tempted by going early on Ahern, and I'm actually struggling to see myself paying for either of Moore or Austin.
Oh, wow.
Even though I really rate Austin as a potential selection, I really have been avoiding the more expensive downgrade options this year. Even after sort of being quite tempted on Caulfield, I ended up passing on him early day. So during the buy periods, like, when you're downgrading at this time of year, you're bringing them on as bench cover for the rest of the year. And with my bench cover, you know, I'd like to pay 120 instead of 160K.
Okay, that's fair advice, I think.
All right, let's move on to trade-in targets now, Mark. And this first one is from Damon Kift on Facebook. And it's actually less of a target, but it's a question about a person who will likely be in most best 22s by the end of the season. That's James Sicily. Do you think he'll most likely end up in your back line or forward line, Mark?
That's a really good question. I'd sort of pushed him to my back line and forgot about the fact that he could move forward as well. At the moment, he's most likely to end up in the back line just because I think that there's more forwards that I'm keen to bring into my team than defenders.
Definitely agree with that, especially when you're talking about selecting a player for half a season rather than a full season. I like taking the punt key position forwards in the back end of a season because if you get their hot patch, they can average a fair bit and you don't have to worry about sort of 23 rounds and poor games potentially dragging down that overall average. So, yeah, I'm definitely keen to have him in my back line. Now let's move on to the questions about the Port Adelaide players. Mark, the guys who are buy free and are trade targets. This first question is from Daniel Manchin on Facebook. Looks like Robbie Gray might be playing more time forward. Is he risky now that he's spending that much time there, noting that last year, Mark, Gray was not actually a 100-plus scorer in the forward line?
Yeah, it is. That is really tricky. His scoring was so great earlier in the year, and he's gone back-to-back under 100 for the first time this year. So, and that's coincided with his move to the forward line. So, yeah, there's definitely some truth in that. At 522 with a break-even of 151, he's going to get cheaper next week. Even playing as a forward, he's going to be pretty difficult to resist at 500,000. He was, that sort of like always planned to bring him in this week or next week. Or my original plan was bring him this week, but then he had the low score, so he's going to get cheaper. Yeah, I'm still thinking that he probably will end up in my team. Where are you sitting?
Yeah, he's coming into my team this week, I'm pretty sure.
Okay.
I definitely accept that the fluctuations will be greater now that he's spending time in the forward line. But I think Robbie Gray can average 100 even in the forward line, even playing 100% up forward. Port are looking a little bit better than they were last year. Having said that, I mean, you know, not quite reach the hype levels post-trade period, but still hopeful that he should get some midfield time and not no midfield time moving forward.
Yeah, I think that he probably just doesn't work price-wise for me this week, so I'll probably just wait another week. But yeah, just he's such a gun, it's hard not to bring him in.
All right, next question is from Eon Cannon or at Mystery Cannon on Facebook. Factoring in the most recent scores, are the Port forwards viable top six targets, or are we having our blinkers on just because they're buy free? He cites Gray as a pure forward, Westhoff scores fading, and that definitely is coinciding with Ryder coming into the team. Boak, who's averaging 94, so it's actually below pure premium numbers. Any of them viable is his question, and I'll chuck in another couple there who I think are on the fringe of being selectable, and that's Tom Rockliffe and Tom Jonas. Jonas averaging 91 in the back line, and Rockliffe still presenting value at his price.
Both of those coming off pretty bad weeks, I think. It's an interesting question. And how many points do you allocate to the fact that they don't have their bye anymore? Say it's the difference between them scoring 100 and a rookie coming on the field scoring 50. That's assuming that you only have 18 in that one bye week where it happens. That works out at about 5 points per game. So if you say have Boak coming in at 94 and he averages 94 for the rest of the year, you could potentially sort of in your calculations add roughly 5 points per game to his score to get to 99, which makes him right up there with the forwards, I think. So from that perspective, I don't mind Boak. I don't mind Gray. I think that Rockliffe will probably average 130 from here, maybe. I wouldn't touch Ryder. Yeah, I think that they are enticing a bit. I wouldn't touch any Gold Coast premiums either.
Gray is the clear standout for me. And as I said, I'm still intending to pick him. Westhoff wouldn't pick, and we've cited Ryder as the reason for that previously. And buy free doesn't help that. Jonas has looked close enough, but probably not convincing enough to actually tip him into my side. I think Rockliffe last week was the week to do it. This week, even though he hasn't gone up a huge amount post the 41, I think a lot of people would probably be jumping off that. So Boak would probably be the only one that I'd consider.
You're underselling Rockliffe a bit here. One thing that did go up was his break even.
I'm glad you can take the mickey out of your insulation, Mark.
it actually went up quite a lot.
What is it at now?
About 85, I think, mate.
85, okay. Yeah, look, Boak would probably be the only guy that I'd consider. He's averaging 94 so far for the season. And if he has a good run at it for the second half of the season, he could conceivably average 96, 97, 98, 99 on the run home. And that's probably good enough buy free. Yes, like you said, agreed. Mark, if you factor in, you know, the 3, 4, 5 points per game improvement that you get having him buy free, that probably tips him over the line. So Boak would be the other one.
Yeah, and at 470, like if you're getting a 97 average forward, that's not actually a bad result.
Mm-hmm. Now, a couple of other questions that we can go rapid fire on, Mark, to wrap up the show. First one from Damon Kift on Facebook. Angus Brayshaw, is he a legit top six defender? We talked about him last week. We said that he was more than a fair trade in target.
Yeah.
Scored 89 off the back of a fairly big game.
Didn't he have 39 touches or something?
That's pretty concerning. Does that sort of change the equation a little bit? Or 39 touches should tell you enough and he's obviously chugging along perfectly fine?
That's a good question. I think that 39 touches says he's definitely getting a lot of midfield time. And although he hasn't got a great Dream Team to Supercoach ratio, that he's available in defense, so that's pretty good.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be too concerned.
Yeah. He's also still cheap. He hasn't gone up too much in price yet. He's gone up, I'll read out his price movement since round six. So 17K, 21K, 15K, 23K, 31K, 31K. Even still, he's only priced at 450, which if you project him being a you know, a top six defender, he's still obviously fairly good value.
Yeah, as long as he meshes well with your buy rounds.
Next question from Paul Dimich on Facebook, asking about Tom McDonald. He's averaging 111 off a 164 on the weekend. Huge. DPP flexible, can pivot with Sicily or Keefe types. Thoughts on him at all?
I think it's really tricky to bring him in just because he had like a hotspot in his foot or something like that, some sort of foot injury. And he's just very risky. Like, given, if you look at his scoring, awesome. If you look at the way he's playing, awesome. Lots of reasons to bring him in. But you're paying a fair bit of money for him now. And I think he's
530.
Yeah, which is like, you're not getting a discount because of his injury risk, which I think is real. Look, I think that his scoring potential is great. Be mindful that Melbourne's come off, except for the Adelaide game, like a pretty easy patch of games. So he may be inflated a bit over the last few weeks. But yeah, just be mindful. If you're going to go there, you are taking a fair bit of risk with the injury.
Yeah, this game is a little bit about buying low and selling high, except for, you know, the must-have players. Tom McDonald's not a must-have, and as a key position forward, tend to more, you know, natural fluctuations in scoring. So key positions always look the best after a massive game, and so it's natural to get a question after 164 boosting his average.
I think McDonald has gone on big runs in the past that have lasted a while.
He has. We're talking probably slightly more than a half of a season. Yeah. I remember him averaging that into, you know, round 13, 14, and then just completely dying in the arse for the last 10 rounds too.
Yeah.
All right. Next question from Craig Johnson from Facebook, asking about Hibbard now that Lever is out. 390K. Only scored 64, though, on the weekend, and Lever was out for most of it.
That would be a massive leap of faith. I actually thought once he posted, like, I think he got two scores pretty close to 100 in a row at some point, that he was going to be back, but it's just not there. I don't know what's going on. You would think that he fits the mold of a defender that gets cheap and then all of a sudden just goes on a good run, and maybe Lever is the catalyst for that. We just haven't seen no evidence that it's likely to happen.
All right, Mark, thanks so much for your time this week. Why don't we finish up with a captain's corner and then call it quits? We've got, obviously, during the bye period, the ability to pick a VCC combo right up till the last game of the round. So that's great for the captain's corner segment, Mark. It does open up plenty of options. Who are you thinking about this week, mate?
Max Gawn seems like a pretty good choice any week. But up against Grundy, I guess.
Gawn plays Grundy. That just nixes two of my top candidates.
I'm guessing that they will, like, he'll be the backup option. With no Tom Mitchell, it's a bit tricky. I don't have Dangerfield, which is a bit tricky.
Fife might not play.
Yeah, Fife probably not going to play. I actually don't have anyone off the top of my head that I could go to. Maybe Tom Rockliffe would be a good one. Parker's had a good couple of weeks.
Sydney against Saints, yeah. Kennedy, even Heaney might be a worthwhile VC combo. I think probably the guy that makes the most sense for my team is Dangerfield VC, playing against North in game two.
Yeah, I think that, one interesting thing to note is that Jacobs' targets the last couple of weeks have actually scored okay. So that maybe North are slightly changing their structure, I'm not sure.
They don't tag Danger anyway. They tag Selwood. Bugger, because I have Selwood. Yeah, tough options this week, unfortunately. Laird mightn't be the worst backup option either. He's averaging 111 for the season, and Frio aren't going brilliantly either. Probably Danger into Gawn for mine. I'd be wary of Grundy versus Gawn. Gawn tends to do pretty well in the hitouts, and that might affect Grundy scoring a tad.
Yep. Bloody hate Grundy. Hate him so much.
Oh, you're on the cruise train now, Mark. Aren't you just loving life?
I would be, except for one factor in that decision, which is, am I allowed to swear on this show? F***ing Goldstein. F***ing Goldstein, oh, you mother. Goldstein, seriously, he's like 2 weeks in a row he was less than 10 at quarter time and he scores 100. Yeah. He scored below 90 like 7 weeks in a row in my team. Just looks so shit. He was like Billings level shit. And then as soon as I trade him, this is exactly why you don't trade premiums, because they and he's just gone bang 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 three in a row, and he scored more than Cruiser on the weekend with 121 or something. So I apologize for the bleeps or not bleeps at the end of that, but it's been building up. All right,
I can hear you breathing deep there. All right, mate. Thanks very much for the show, and all the best for the first week of the buys. Hopefully our community continues to smash it. It's always very interesting to see what falls out at the end of the three rounds. So we'll catch you again. We've got you on throughout the entire buy series, Mark, which is pretty exciting.
That's very lucky for you guys. After me coaching Luke into 14th at the moment, my services are in high demand.
Yeah, and then you'll have a little break after that. So we'll enjoy you for these 3 weeks while we can, and we'll catch you next week, mate.
See you, mate.